You can get consolation from all sorts of falsehoods, but because it's consoling, it doesn't mean it's true.
No, there are a lot of very religious scientists around.
Science, there is no evidence for any kind of supernatural being of any kind.
You think people should not have a choice of what to do with their body?
Anti-murdering the unborn.
And I say to the grown-ups, if you want to deny evolution and live in your world that's completely inconsistent with everything we observe in the universe, that's fine. But don't make your kids do it, because we need
But why should I believe?
Well, because it's the truth.
You had mentioned that you wanted to kind of go back to that what would change your mind on whether God exists topic. And I guess that's kind of where we're going to end, maybe with some Buddhism stuff at the tail end of this. So,
yeah, I think the Buddhism we can just leave out for a different time, you know?
Okay.
So let's just talk about, yeah. So you had asked me the other day, like, what would change my views about God? And, you know, it got me thinking, like, what would it actually take? Because I talked about, you know, I've got these axioms about the physical reality of the world, the physical laws of the universe. And like, one thing that is possible is that, okay, those physical laws, like, change every time you run it. So you fire a projectile, and the next time you fire it, it goes around the planet. And then the next time you fire it, it goes, like, up to the moon. You know, so your physical laws are changing with time. So then you can assume it's unreasonable to make that assumption. They remain constant over time, right?
Like into the past.
Into the past, yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's one thing. But then I thought more generally, like, what is my way of assessing the different likelihoods of various things? And then how do I update them? And so there's this thing I would encourage anyone to look up. It's called Bayesian thinking. And it's based off Bayes' theorem, which is essentially what you have when you go through the world, you gain experience. So for instance, you know, the sun rises every day. So I have a certain probability, just like through my experience with the world, that of what I think about the sun, that it's going to rise, you know, and it's very, very high because it's always done it,
right.
You know. And then there are things like, I don't know, maybe lightning striking a tree, which I might have seen maybe once in my whole life. So I have a very low probability for it, but I know it can happen.
Yeah.
You know, and so as you go through life, you gain experience, you read books or whatever, you have an entire framework of sort of statements. And then you have probabilities associated with those. Even though you might not know the exact probability, you have like a rough likelihood, right?
Yeah.
And so the way I try to update my information is to, when I'm given or try to update my belief in something, is that when I'm given new information, I adjust the probability. So rarely for me is it that, oh, I don't believe in God, now I believe in God, or I believe that, you know, some technique to build a chatbot is good, and now I believe that it's bad. It's just that I learned some new information. Let's take the chatbot example, that shows that this chatbot, this technique for building a chatbot, makes the chatbot's dialogue a little less believable than this other method, you know, for creating dialogue. This other method is more human-like. So I don't just say, oh, well, this is false, throw it out. You know, I just update my belief about that is not as good, because now we have a better method, right?
Okay.
So when it comes to God, there would be certain things, I think, that would change depending on how you define it, that I could observe in the world that would make me think, oh, okay, this aspect of what people are calling God is more likely. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yeah.
And so you feel like an irregular or more irregularity in natural laws would be some kind of like intervention of an outside force or like a supernatural force?
Well, that would make me question the assumption of like of in the past, the laws being constant.
Okay.
Right. Because that's the assumption I'm making right now. So like right now, I mean, because every time I can make a prediction, I can observe it, you know, and then that's in the past. And it's just been that way for hundreds of, like, as long as we've documented this stuff as humans.
Right.
It makes me think, okay, that seems very constant. There's nothing giving me reason to question that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it would be, so for instance, like, if you take some aspect of what would be construed as, God, like, okay, let's say a being appears to you and says, I am God. Right. Okay. And then he says, worship me. Well, okay, that would make me certainly update my probability that there is like a being out there that in some way interacts with this universe that also thinks itself as God and wants me to worship it. So for all those things, like some existing entity that thinks it's a God wants to be worshipped. Certainly my probabilities would increase for that. Now, I have to know, you know, there have been plenty of people who've claimed to have seen God, plenty of people who, like, you can find on YouTube that say they've seen different versions of God and it's delusions, you know?
Yeah.
And there's hallucinations all the time. I myself have had a hallucination, like, where it looks like it's photoreal, like I'm looking at you right now, you know? So there's your own mind can deceive you. But still, given all that, it would update that probability. So that probability is really, really low now that there's a being that exists that wants to be worshipped. That would still, like, boost it up, you know?
Yeah.
And there could be other things that would boost it up more. And so that's kind of, I think, my framework for thinking and the way evidence would adjust that.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. That's really interesting. just on that topic, the Bible has a few areas where it addresses this sort of concept of belief and, like, what would change their mind.
Mm.
And in Luke 16, there's a situation where this guy who has lots of brothers is in hell.
Yeah.
And I forget who it is that comes to him. Maybe it's Abraham. A little fuzzy on the context. I could just pull it up. But basically the gist of it is he's like, go. First, he wants water. And they can't give him any water. He's like, just a drop, like anything in this pain.
Yeah.
And he's like, can you just at least go to my brothers and tell them what this is like so they won't end up here?
Yeah.
Like, can you send someone from the dead to tell them? And the response is, even if someone were to rise from the dead, they wouldn't believe that person.
Yeah.
And I guess it's kind of like, and then also in Romans 1, it tells us that, like, your belief in God, you don't need these crazy, like, supernatural events.
Yeah.
It's like grounded, it's in what has been made that is the revelation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that, or at least from a Christian standpoint, like, we don't need to see, because a lot of people are like, well, if I saw the resurrection, I would believe. It's like, well, these people saw his death and heard about his resurrection and may have even seen it and didn't believe.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it's just interesting to have those accounts of, it's not necessarily about witnessing something miraculous.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a whole host of, I think, and this is something that's, maybe a lot of Christians don't understand, but when you're outside of Christianity, you realize that, like, God, what people call God, can be a lot of different things. Mm. And all those different things have a certain set of, like, attributes. Like, one of them is perfect, right? Like, perfect being. But, I mean, there's plenty of gods that aren't perfect. Like, if you look at the pantheon of gods in Greek mythology, most of them aren't perfect.
They're more like,
they're more like
humans or something.
Humans, yeah. In many ways.
Powerful humans or something.
Powerful humans. If you look at gods in Buddhism, you have different ranges, you know? So there would be, like, more, I guess you would say, enlightened gods that are better, and then some that are worse, you know?
Yeah.
So I think when you're looking at evidence, you're saying, well, what is the attribute I'm talking about? And then what are things that would make me believe in that attribute existing, you know?
So let me ask you from your perspective what you think about this. So
yeah.
For me, one of the things I always felt like was logical about the Christian God was that he is considered, like, supremely powerful or, like, infinitely powerful.
Yeah.
So how would you have, like, from a pantheistic worldview, how could you have multiple, like, all-powerful gods? Or would you only have, like, is there an amount of power that's split up between these gods? Like, where's the ultimate authority, I guess? Because I always felt like that was a, I guess, a logical advantage to Christianity is that one powerful being.
Yeah.
Because I can't, like, how do you have, like, more than one universe? Like, if the definition of universe is, like, all things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, that's always something I've thought was a good logical kind of point to make. But I don't, I'm not familiar with these other conceptions of God. Like, how do the pantheistic power, how does that divide up, I guess, is my question.
Well, it's just a hierarchy. Like, I mean, even in the Bible, it's a hierarchy. You have the most powerful, and then you have angels, which are more powerful than humans, and you have, like, demons that are powerful.
So at some point, they will back up to an all-powerful.
Yeah, like, being, I mean, in, like, in the Greek pantheon, it's Zeus, you know? Like, there's, like, some god that basically is the tip top of the hierarchy, and then you got, like, some structure.
So that's interesting. So even pretty much every religion boils down to some type of ultimate authority.
Well, Taoism. Now, it is debatable whether or not Taoism is like, Taoism says there's just, like, an all-encompassing thing, basically. Like, the universe is kind of the statement. And that could also be constructed as God. So, maybe. It's debatable whether or not Taoism is religious in that way. But it is, that would be the one exception that sort of falls comes to mind.
Why do you think humans are so hardwired to boil things down to an ultimate authority? Like, we're all about hierarchies. Yeah. We all, like, someone's got to be the top.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then even in our religious views or philosophical views, there's always an ultimate authority somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, what does that come from?
Well, it just comes from, I think, the nature of the world, you know? So if you imagine tall, then tall is defined in many ways. And this is a very Taoist sort of thought. But you cannot have tall without having short. Right. And you cannot have great without, or like big without having small. Right. Like, imagine there is no small. What is big? It's meaningless.
Everything's just.
Yeah.
What it is.
Yeah. So the, and the extension of that, you can see in every little child. It's like, what if I add one to it? And if I add one, you know, you just keep going and keep going, and you reach the extreme. So I think it's part of just our own like wiring in our skull.
Yeah.
You know, and the way we interact with the world that builds that construct of the ultimate, well, there's like the ultimate good and then there's the ultimate bad. Yeah. But if there were no bad, then what is good? You know, right. You could just say it's all bad. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right.
And from a Christian perspective, one reason I thought God allowed evil was because without it, I don't think we would appreciate good.
Yeah.
You know, like if everything was just cush all the time, like we never, you know, fell short in the garden. Like, I don't know how much they appreciated God or if they realized what they had.
Yeah.
Because they were, I mean, it's just this fruit of knowledge. It's like they're willing to risk, like, because we all put ourselves in their shoes and we're like, oh, we would never do that. Like, why? You're in the garden. Everything's perfect.
Yeah.
But it's like, I guess if all everything was good, you don't appreciate it. Almost like a spoiled kid that gets everything they want.
Yeah.
They don't appreciate these resources that they've been given.
Yeah.
Because they have nothing to compare it to. I wonder if that is sort of the root of the issue.
What exactly?
The root of...
No, appreciation?
Right, underappreciating.
Underappreciating? I don't know. I feel like, you know, you could probably do it without the degree of suffering and torment in the world, you know? Because that's one issue I have with this idea of an omnipotent God and all good God.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't seem to follow to me when you see the degree of misery in the world that you could have, you could be both those things. You could be all good, you're just not all powerful, right? And you could be all powerful, but certainly not all good. If you're both of those, then how do you explain the, you know, I mean, when you've seen little kids with cancer and their parents, it's like, this is ridiculous levels of suffering.
Right.
You know? And I think that's, you know, an issue that certainly theologians in most, I would say, have struggled with for a long time. Coming up, how to explain that. Like, how do you explain this observation we see in the world? How do you reconcile that with an all-powerful and an all-good God?
Yeah. Yeah, and I definitely wouldn't claim to have the answer to that, but one thought that I've had, and I've heard other people say before, and I think is probably the best way to approach it, because I think you can get into all kinds of weeds about it, but if Christianity is true, or if Christ is who he said he was, that he claimed to be God.
Yeah.
So if Christ is God, he didn't think he was too good to enter into our suffering. And if Christ is who he said he was, and he wasn't the blaspheming political revolutionary that the Jews were saying he was, like, you're a blasphemer, you're trying to say that you're God and all these things. If he was who he said he was, and he is God, and he came to earth, I think that's a pretty big statement to enter into our suffering and then to be crucified with as an innocent person. So, like, even though he's allowed a lot of suffering, he also entered into that suffering with us.
Yeah.
And while he was here, he was, you know, healing us and showing who he was. And then the worst act in the history of the world was killing the only innocent person that ever lived. So I think it's an interesting way to view suffering.
Does that reconcile it for you? Like, that belief, do you think, does that make you feel okay about it?
It's not like 100% like, this justifies all the things that have happened.
Yeah.
No horrible atrocity like that is ever going to sit right with anybody.
Well, to me, it seems like just another atrocity on top of atrocities. Like, if you had an innocent person and you killed them, that's just another atrocity.
Oh, right, right. Well, a key point to that would be that the worst atrocity ever, right? It is an atrocity.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
But if he did rise from the dead,
yeah,
then it's like, it's saying he conquered the worst act that has ever been done.
Yeah.
So I guess to kind of bring it all home would be the there's hope in suffering.
Yeah.
And God can make great things come out of horrible things.
Yeah.
And if the promise of Scripture is true, there will be a renewed heaven and a renewed earth.
Yeah.
And as a Christian, all that suffering will be turned into crowns and eternity.
I guess that would be perhaps a good, a satisfactory explanation, like if I were a Christian, if there wasn't hell. The fact that there's hell makes that, I think, for me, just not satisfactory. Because, like, okay, let's say you have a God that suffers for a little bit, like 30 years, whatever. Like, I mean, it wasn't that long, but, I mean, how long did crucifixion take? Well, a couple days?
Yeah, I mean, his ministry was 3 years, but I guess he was persecuted throughout that whole time, but really it gets really intense towards that last, I guess, couple weeks.
And then if you think of that, and then on the other side, like, just billions of people, ultimate torment, forever, like, that just doesn't compare to me. Yeah. And also, too, like, if you think about just being, like, I can't think about what it's like to be a father, but if, you know, you can. And if you think about what could your child do that would make you, like, okay, maybe they become a total psychopath, like, you know, murder people and stuff. Would you still sentence them for eternity? Like, I feel like there's nothing you could possibly do that's finite that would justify infinite torment.
Yeah.
Like, even for the worst people. And then you see, like, all the people that are... But I don't want to get into, like, bashing Christianity or anything. But I'm just trying to give you, like, some of the things that I've thought about that I was like, this just doesn't add up to me.
I mean, I've thought about those things, too.
Yeah.
You know, hell doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
Like, just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean I am happy about the way God has done everything.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I wish hell didn't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
But in... You know, if he is all-knowing, he knows things I don't, and he must have a good reason for it.
Yeah.
But there's a few different ways to think about hell, I guess. One explanation I've heard is there can't be anything good in hell because God's not there.
Yeah.
Not that he's not there, but he's turned his back. He's turned his face from it. So, like, there can't be, like, right now we experience common grace.
Yeah.
Like, God has given us a life, or he's given us these certain things that we have.
Mm.
In hell, there is no common grace. Like, there is no good because there's no God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like whatever's left can't be anything positive.
I kind of see what you're saying. I mean, something similar is what the Jews think about. They don't, because, you know, in the Old Testament, there's not really, like, in the Torah, there's not really a hell. And it's not really thematicized like in the New Testament. So
what is it exactly?
It's basically a place from the different rabbis I've heard. It seems to be, and I'm not a Jew or an Orthodox or rabbi or anything, but like, just from what I've read and watched, it seems to be a place that people go when they die and they have to come to terms with all the bad things they did. And that is the suffering. So the suffering is all the things, all the bad things you did in your life. And you have to recognize them and accept them and come to terms with them. And if you, what is it? When you're through that process, depending on the rabbi you listen to, some will say that you are given a second chance, you're reincarnated, and you have another chance to go through life and live a good life. Yeah.
Well, I've never heard that before. That's interesting.
Yeah. You can just Google YouTube, afterlife rabbi, and you can find different rabbis explaining, because it's not, the afterlife is an interesting concept in Judaism if you look into it, because not much is said in the Torah, and the Judaism has a tradition much I would say not very much like the church. So they have different rabbis that say that they have what's called, I think it's called the Mishnah, which is a set of texts written by all these other rabbis where they give their theories about certain things like the afterlife. You know, and so there'll be schools of thought that associate themselves, like, this rabbi said this, or, and this rabbi said this.
Mm.
And, you know, there's various different views of the afterlife, whether or not there's a hell, or if there is, like, what is it? You know,
yeah,
all those types of things. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah, hell's one of those things. And what's interesting about hell is in the New Testament, it's mentioned more than heaven.
Yeah.
Like Jesus is constantly talking about hell. Yeah.
Who was the fire and brimstone preacher with the Protestant name?
Jonathan Edwards.
Yeah, yeah, he's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Sinners in the hands
of
the angry
God. Yeah. Hell.
And I heard something recently, and we can let you discuss this and we'll pick it apart, I guess. But he said there can be no meaning in life without hell.
Okay.
And I thought that was interesting. I was like, what does he mean by that?
Yeah.
And it was basically like, if there's no bad, you don't appreciate the good, I guess.
Mm.
But also, if there's no like ultimate aspiration or goal, like heaven or hell,
yeah,
it's like, what are you aiming towards? Because when you don't have any goal in your life,
yeah,
it's things become meaningless. Like, if my goal with this podcast isn't to influence someone in a positive way, why am I doing this? And then it sort of loses its meaning.
Yeah.
So what would you say to that statement that you can't have meaning without hell?
Without hell, like the Christian interpretation of hell?
Or just like, I guess so, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so you can't have meaning without utter torment for billions of people. I would say it's ridiculous. No, I mean, you can have, so for instance, you can have hurdles. You need a goal. That's certainly true. Everyone needs goals they're working towards. Anyone that feels aimless and like they have, there's nothing they're working towards. There's actually a lot of research on this in psychological studies and everything where the people feel get in a flow state or feel very fulfilled when they have some task they're working to achieve and they're making incremental progress towards that goal. Mm. Right. So we know all that. I just think that is the process that gives meaning. You don't need like someone behind you saying, I'm going to kill you if you don't reach your goal, you know,
So it's more about meaning. The positive goal for you, not so much of having this intense counterbalance to
The goal. Well, in terms of meaning, if we're talking about meaning for your life, feeling fulfilled.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're talking about, let's say, from a religious view of like ultimate purpose, so like after you die, meaning, could you have it from a religious view if you didn't have hell? If there's only.
Well, I mean, there's. So in Buddhism, there's the idea of reincarnation, which the goal is you're supposed to practice like compassion and kindness, not kill things, like all these things, right? And if you live through life and you do actions that are good and you are reincarnated ideally as a better being. And then you can go through this process continuing to better yourself, compassion through kindness, through love. And the goal there, what gives meaning is to finally not exist. Because in Buddhism, the idea is that everything that is impermanent is suffering. Life is suffering when it comes back down to it. And the ultimate freedom is to escape, to breathe out, and to have ultimate peace into the universe, into nothing. To not have this cycle of rebirth where you're making actions that hurt other people, that aren't good, that are bad, that are, you know, don't build a better world.
Mm-hmm.
And to finally reach the point where you've done all that and your actions were good. You lived the life that helped everyone around you and made them better people. And then to breathe out into peaceful darkness. Yeah.
Yeah, because that process of being reincarnated sounds brutal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's...
Yeah.
Felt like a big negative.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but like, I'm just
ready not to exist anymore. Yeah. This was brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can tell you, I mean, in terms of like meaning from a religious perspective, you know, I mean, that gives however many, what is it, like 500 million Buddhist meaning.
Yeah. Yeah. That was just a phrase I had never heard before. And I was like, huh, that's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah.
So we are, let's see, we're about 1 hour and 8 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess final thoughts.
Yeah.
And then we'll kind of wrap things up.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been an interesting conversation. That's what I would say. I don't really have too much to add, I guess.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that went really well again.
I would say what would be interesting, though, because I think this is kind of cool, I've noticed in this talk, is taking like a religious topic and talking about what the different religions would think about it. So you have Christianity that you could talk about. And then, you know, I mean, I'd have to read up more and learn more of the details, because I've been just sort of like a passive consumer of these other religions to try to pull out things that are useful for my life. You know, it's not like I'm a Buddhist sitting in a temple, like practicing, understanding all the details. I just have read the books by, we need to show that the monk, the Vietnamese monk.
Yeah, definitely. We'll put it up on the screen during that part.
But I've just sort of read the different ideas and philosophies from the various religions and then found, for me, the very useful were Buddhism and Taoism. And then there's this other sort of, I guess it would be called life philosophy. It's not really a religion, but Stoicism is very useful. And so I think that's something I noticed was pretty interesting. Like, if you take something like, is it necessary to have hell for to have meaning in life, right? And then, you know, you can say, well, this is why I think it gives me, you know, gives Christians meaning, or it doesn't, or they struggle with it, or whatever. Yeah. I can say, well, this is the way, you know, Buddhists think about it, or this is the way maybe a Taoist might think about that idea. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And hopefully when you, because this is our last episode with John in America. Mm. So hopefully as you return, we can figure out how to do OBS and actually do some screencasts or whatever. Because we're going to try to, we're calling this little series the Belief Dialogues.
Yeah.
And we're hoping to maybe moving forward as we do Skype calls to have questions from listeners and like looking for life advice. And we can kind of apply our different worldviews, what we think would be the best advice for people.
Mm.
So we're hopefully going to bridge into that in our next episodes. But this, up until this point, I think we have about six solid episodes. I think that's a good way to sort of kick everything off. So, John, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, Dan. It's been a blast.
All right, that's it. Thanks, guys. Please like and subscribe.